Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game at UT.
The Texas Tech kicker did a fake field goal. I mean, you could see in his face that he was going to make the first down. And Tony Brankins, outside linebacker, came across and completely destroyed him. I thought he was dead. Everyone thought he was dead. That hit will always be, you know, something I'll never forget for sure.
Put yourself in the action with tickets from Ticket City. Visit hook'em.com and click tickets.
I'll let Coach open it up with some comments, and then if you have a question, raise your hand, and we'll get a mic to you.
To recap the game, just really excited to get a road win in an extremely difficult environment. I know one that our program at Texas over the years has certainly had difficulty winning in. That's a really good football team with one of the top offenses in the country. And they proved why. And I was really proud of the way that our guys jumped out and that our defense, although we gave up quite a few yards, we got three turnovers and a fourth down stop, which is very complimentary football. It set our offense up for many of the short fields and the drives that scored points. And then even though, you know, again, one of the best offenses in the country score a touchdown. You know, we're up 17. They score a touchdown. They get a great executed onside kick to get another possession. Probably the most disappointing possession offensively for us was then the second to last possession where we weren't able to run the clock out. And then obviously they go down and score again. And, you know, but just thrilled to death to see our guys finish, see our guys respond. That's a couple times this year that we've been able to do that, and couldn't be prouder of our guys for their fight, for their grit, for their tenacity. I do have an injury update. I apologize. It's on my phone. Devontae Davis, MRI on his knee and ankle, got a bone bruise on his knee, strain of a muscle in his ankle. We're going to push. We're going to plan on having him, but it's going to be, you know, towards the end of the week before anything is definitive. Brandon Jones is running really well straight ahead right now. The next step in his progression is to, you know, kind of stop and cut, and we feel like, you know, Wednesday is a pretty good target date for him. The same for Colin Johnson. He is scheduled for an injection in that knee today, and hopefully within the next 24 hours, the swelling goes down, he starts to feel a little bit better, and we can increase his activity as the week progresses. Caden Stearns will lift weights today. He'll be non-contact tomorrow, and then if everything goes according to plan, he should be ready to go on Saturday. Josh Thompson, on the other hand, his ankle looks a little bit worse today than it did yesterday, so we're hopeful that thing can turn around. But right now, not looking great. And probably the only other one of note, Keontae Ingram, you know, aggravated his hip pointer, and you know, we think that is a thing that he'll be able to work his way back in, you know, by Tuesday or Wednesday. Just talking about this game ahead, this is what an awesome opportunity, especially for our 26 seniors, to be honored on senior night as a top 25 team in the country, having already solidified the best record, regular season record in the last 5 years here at Texas, with our plans on a couple more wins to add to that. And they deserve our best shot, and I know that they'll give us their best shot. And we're playing one of the best teams in the country, another top 25 team in Iowa State, one that's won 5 straight. They sit, I believe they're tied with us for second place in the conference. So there's a lot at stake in terms of conference rankings. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Matt Campbell and what he's been able to do in a few years there in terms of the development of the talent that he has, and also bringing in quality talent as well. And this is, on paper, the best defense in the conference. So our offense will certainly be challenged. And, we've got our work cut out for us. But we are excited as all get out. We've got it. Again, when you win, you get a little extra pep in your step. You go back to work. You know that if you're not careful, that winning can mask some issues that you have and you're always going to have throughout the season that you need to improve on. And we want to make sure that we attack those issues and correct those issues and continue to improve as the season progresses. Questions?
Start in the back, Roger.
You've talked a lot about Sam's growth based a lot on continuity with staff, second year with him, but there's got to be a little bit more. I mean, he's getting into kind of rarefied air with the numbers and his ability to make plays when you have to have plays, both the technically and intangibles. What are you seeing from him?
Well, I appreciate that. There's both. There is the technical side. I think Sam's done a really good job of compacting his base. You know, guys with big guys tend to overstride when they throw, which causes them to be a little bit erratic. He's compacted his base and his lower body throwing motion. And the thing that he's done on a continual basis, he still has some bad habits here and there, but, he's holding the ball high, which is allowing him to get the ball out quicker. He's made a very concerted effort to do that. And then the intangible, I think it's trust. It's trust. He trusts Tim Beck. He trusts the offensive staff. He trusts his wide receivers. He trusts his offensive line. And at the end of the day, he trusts himself a lot more than I think that he did in the past. And so when you trust yourself, it allows you to be more aggressive. You trust your knowledge of the offense. And we have given him a lot of freedom in terms of the things that we've allowed him to do at the line of scrimmage. And for the most part, he's been spot on. And he's being very aggressive without being reckless.
In the middle, Steve.
Coach, last year Iowa State game was a back and forth, just kind of a tight game, defensive game. I guess it was Shane that had to throw a lot of the short passes, take what you get. Kind of what you're expecting this week, Coach?
Yeah, that was the unveiling of that dime package of theirs that has, flourished throughout last season and obviously into this season, making them, the best defense statistically in our conference. So they've evolved. They're doing a little bit more. Last year it was almost every snap, cloud the corners and play what we call the Joker at about 8 to 10 yards and let him kind of run the alley, kind of a bare defense look. This year, a little bit more multiple, a little bit more quarters, a little bit more halves in the coverage scheme. Still not a whole lot of man, but they are pressuring a little bit more. Had a lot of success pressuring West Virginia. And so I do think that, again, the scheme makes it very difficult. It's similar to West Virginia a little bit, where you're going to feel like there's eight guys in the box in the run game, but then when you drop back to pass, there's also eight guys dropping back to pass too. And so it is difficult. We're going to have to play action some guys. We're going to have to get the quarterback on the run. We're going to have to put some guys into conflicts in their zones. But the one thing they're doing much better this year than last year is even in their drop eight coverage, it's much more multiple. And so very similar to the West Virginia week, I feel like, as a lot of defenses do, getting ready for, the triple option offenses, it's something completely new that you've got a week to install some things that, to be honest with you, are a little bit new for your players. And so we've got to really make sure that we don't overload them with too much offense in the game plan, but we've also got to be sound. Whereas before, you could just say, hey, they're going to play one front and one coverage. Let's go attack it in this myriad of ways. And now they're doing a much better job of mixing coverages and mixing pressures.
Down front and left, Brian.
Tom, you touched on it. Getting seven wins is a big deal, even though it doesn't sound like that. But in the grand scheme of where this program is, it is. And I wonder, did you feel like that the guys sort of crossed a major psychological hump in terms of two losses, oh, this guy's falling again, and they put it together and they win, and now, you know, y'all have a lot of runway left, it seems like.
I do. I think I'd be naive to say that that's not real. I think, you know, we were psychologically maybe a little bit on some shaky ground after the last 2 weeks, and the way that those games happened, you know, with a three-point loss on the road and a one-point heartbreaker here to a top-10 football team. You know, there were some guys that maybe could have gone either way had the game turned out differently, but it is obviously we've got work to do. You know, again, I point to our offense very, very similarly that I did in the West Virginia game. You know, when we had second goal at the one and had to kick a field goal, and you know, first and 10, and we rattle off a 12-yard run and get holding called. You know, and in this game we went three and out with 3 minutes left. You know, so there are certainly things that our offense can do better to help our defense. Our defense in the last 5 weeks has played, I think it's, you know, four out of the top 10 passing offenses in the country happen to reside in our conference. We played them four out of the last 5 weeks. Total offense, we played four out of the last five of our games have been against top 12 total offenses, and scoring offense, I think it's four out of the last 12 too. So we understand, and we did it with a pretty much a mash unit there in the second half, with a bunch of guys that had gotten dinged up and were out. So we expect to play a lot better defense this week. One, because we're going to be better. We're going to learn from the things that went wrong in the last couple games. We're also going to enhance what we did right. We turned the ball over three times and had a fourth down stop on the 35-yard line, which was critical in that game, the way it played out. And so, and we should be getting healthier, and that's always a good thing.
Do you feel like that the way Sam is playing and the offense in general, is this the closest or the most secure you feel if y'all do get in a shootout, you know, that's going to be okay?
Yeah, I kind of reading my mind here the last couple of questions.
Yeah.
That we certainly are not going to be a throw at every snap team. That's not, if we had our druthers, we're gonna run the football, and we're gonna do it with tempo. We're gonna be our pro spread run game with, you know, very NFL tendencies. We're gonna run play action pass on first and second down. We're going to drop back and throw on third down and second long. But if need be, which was the case the last couple of weeks, we've called more drop back pass on first and second down in the last 2 weeks than probably the entire first 8 weeks combined. And we've got a lot of confidence in that. And I think a lot of that confidence stems up front. You know, I know the sack numbers were not pretty. I think Sam would be the first to admit that he was responsible for a few of those. But, you know, we have, knock on wood, we've been able to protect him very well. And then, obviously, we're pretty talented on the perimeter.
Front of the right, Dennis.
You just kind of touched on it with the defense. After West Virginia, you talked about maybe trimming the call sheet a little bit, simplifying. Did you see some fruit from that that maybe did lead to those turnovers?
I did early, and then we started getting banged up, and it was, okay, who can play what? You know, it's, okay, Donovan Duvernay, go to nickel. Well, P.J. Foster, or B.J. Foster, you've got to go to bench safety when all you've been doing for the last 5 weeks has been playing our joker position. And P.J. Locke, you're going to go from nickel to field safety. And so there was a lot of moving parts there in the second half in terms of what we were able to do. So we weren't able to see the exact culmination of all of the week's worth of preparation just because so many guys got knocked out. But I think our guys felt more confident in the game plan, in the calls, what they're supposed to do, what gaps they're supposed to fit, what zones they're supposed to cover, which allowed them to play a little bit faster.
Onward.
Coach, we have been talking about the need to get a pass rush. It seemed like you got more of that on Saturday. Can you just talk about what you saw up front, especially after you watched the film again? And the second part of my question would be, it seems like teams are targeting Chris Boyd a little bit over the past couple of weeks. Can you just give me your evaluation of his performance?
I thought he played great against West Virginia, really did. And I don't know if targeting, I think, you know, I know as offensive coaches, I mean, there's got to be a massive discrepancy between talent, between two different corners in order to, quote, target a guy or not target a guy. I know you go back to our days at Houston when we had William Jackson, who was a first rounder. You know, that guy saw maybe two or three balls thrown his way all game, you know, because it was a, hey, William, go cover that guy and we'll see you at the end of the game with your pizza, you know. And we don't have that right now, especially in this league. You know, we were joking yesterday, you know, who's going to be the first team all-conference wide receivers in this league, let alone the second team? I mean, this is a league full of, I mean, ridiculously talented wide receivers and really good quarterbacks. So I think when balls get thrown at Chris, they're thrown because that's what the coverage and the secondary structure, based on whatever route scheme was called by the offense, that's where the ball is intended to go. But I don't think it's a necessarily a, hey, we're going to throw at this guy. I wouldn't. Chris is a really talented guy that has made a lot of plays for us over the years. And I forget.
Pass rush.
Yeah, I think we did a good job of letting, you know, credit to Todd Orlando and Oscar Giles for, you know, in obvious passing situations, you know, let Charles Amenihu come off the edge a little bit. He's really, really good at that. He's long. You know, he had a couple hurries. He obviously had the play that was reviewed where he knocked it out of the quarterback's hands. I think having Malcolm back is certainly a big help there. And then having Brecken Hager be fresh and being able to rush off the edge. Those guys, you know, schematically, I think our coaches did a good job putting them in a position. Now, obviously, we're playing a team that throws it quite a bit. So predicting those pass situations is a little bit more spot on. But I thought our guys, you know, Charles, Brecken, and Malcolm, all three of those guys. And Nelly got good push up the middle, too. So those guys got really good push, but I thought our staff put them in a really good position, too.
On your left, Danny.
Tom, in regards to Saturday's Senior Day ceremony, how many juniors do you expect to participate? And then, since they're not on the list, are John and Jamari expected back next year?
Yeah, I don't expect any juniors. I know we had a few last year that had a year of eligibility but were graduated and wanted to move on with the next chapter of their life, and we're thrilled to death for them that they're graduates of the University of Texas and they're moving on with their life, and it's fun to see them grow beyond the game of football. But this year I don't foresee any juniors, or at least I've not been made aware. And then, yes, that's correct. Our intention is to redshirt Jamari and John Burt and have both those guys back next year. John's played in two games, I believe, so he's got two games left, and Jamari, I believe, two games now as well, so he's got two games left.
All right, to the middle, Bob.
What's impressed you most about Brock Purdy, and where do you start with Akeem Butler with those two guys?
Oh, I've known Akeem since high school. We recruited him when we were at the University of Houston, and great kid. I mean, he was raw. He was a basketball guy. But extremely talented. You know, I think the thing that he has developed in his game is his physicality. Much more physical when the ball is in the air and in the run game. You know, he's a punishing blocker out there on the perimeter. And then Purdy is, the guy's undefeated. And, you know, he's 5-0. He's got a ton of moxie. You can tell nothing phases that kid. It doesn't matter the opponent, the atmosphere, the stadium. He's got that it factor. And he's got really, really good legs. You know, I mean, he can make plays with his feet when things break down, and not just as a runner, but he can extend plays and throw the ball down the field.
Back here on your left, Chip.
Tom, in your conversations with Todd, year two in the league, guys obviously spend the whole offseason preparing for the defense. Can you just talk about that, how you know you're seeing teams try and attack his defense and the conversations about mixing fronts and being multiple?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you play, we have mixed fronts quite a bit. You know, just because you only see three down linemen in the game doesn't mean we're not lined up in four down spacing. You know, whether it be Jeff McCulloch as a five technique and slide one of the ends down into a three technique, that constitutes a four-man front. So I think when you're up here in the press box and you see three guys with their hand in the dirt and Jeff McCulloch standing on the edge, you think, oh, that must be a three-man front. It's not. It's a four-man front in terms of the spacing. So we have been very multiple in terms of our front presentation. I think, you know, in a league, especially in this stretch where you're playing the ninth best passing team in the country, the 10th best passing team in the country, the 5th best passing team in the country, and the 2nd best passing team in the country, you're going to want some DBs on the field. You're going to want to be in that lightning package. You're going to want B.J. Foster, you know, out there roaming around in the middle of the field. So I think it's very calculated based on the types of offenses that we're seeing. Now, what they have done is done a good job running the football, and we've got to make sure that we get sounder more sound in our dime packages against the run. But I think, you know, whether it's this year, last year, whatever year, when you're playing four of the top 10 passing offenses in the country, two of the top five, you know, the common logic says, hey, get some DBs on the field.
On the far right, Cedric.
The time to play five games in a row where it's literally been decided in the last 30 seconds. There are seniors in the locker room that have been on the short end of that stick so many times.
Many times.
So what does it say about the leadership in that room that's allowed them to be able to come out on top on some of these games this year?
It's awesome. You know, we've got a great group of captains in Andrew Beck and Elijah Rodriguez and Brecken Hager and Chris Nelson Anthony Wheeler. Those guys have seen a lot in their time here on the 40 acres, been through a lot, sacrificed a lot. And it's not just them. You know, you asked about the senior leaders. I mean, you can go to, you know, Charles Amenahue. You can go to Gary Johnson. You can go to P.J. Locke. You can go to Chris Boyd. You can go to, I'm sure I'm leaving some out here, but, you know, that senior class has been very dialed in. Gerard Hurd, you know, he was our offensive MVP for the way that he played and was able to switch positions, you know, in the course of 2 days and come up huge for us throughout the night. And so these guys realize, I think, more than the young guys of how different this team is compared to teams of the past, teams that they've been associated with. And I think that their charge to their guys that are younger than them has been, hey, it's time to put the pedal to the metal now. You know, now is not time to, as tired as we are, as banged up as we are, now is not the time to try to take a deep breath. We've got 12 days left in the regular season, and then hopefully a couple postseason games after that. And you know, these guys are fully aware of what this team is capable of doing, because they have seen what the other teams that they've been on have been like, and the culture in that locker room, and the they know the potential of this team, and I think they're hell-bent on making sure that this team achieves its potential.
Up front in the middle, Kirk.
Tom, you said you were going to win with defense. I know you like to run the game. You like the running game as part. It seemed like you all evolved into the quintessential Big 12 team. Does that bother you, or is it just kind of dictated by your personnel and your strengths?
The latter. Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I like winning, and we're going to win the game the way that the game needs to be won. We're going to win the game. You know, we're still not where we want to be running the football. We're light years ahead of where we were, but the bar was set pretty low. So we're still not quite there yet. And to be honest with you, our best players on offense are our receivers and our quarterback and our tight end. And our running backs out of the backfield. You know, now are we going to turn into a throw it 70 times a game, you know, outfit? No, we'll never do that. But we understand that as good of a plan we have on defense, as good of players as we have on defense, one, this stretch of five games has been, I mean, murderer's row of elite offenses, not just in this league, but in the country, and that our defense, you know, the last couple especially, have been really, really banged up. And, you know, we understand that we're not going to win. We weren't going to win the last few games 17-14. It just wasn't going to happen. And that's something that our offense understands very early in the week. They understand it, you know, as we install the game plan. The game plan's always going to start with, you know, being balanced. But as the game progresses and you see what is needed to win, then you adjust, and we feel comfortable adjusting to that.
And as a follow-up, this is Breckin Hager's last home game. What's he meant to this program?
Well, obviously he's a legacy. His dad was a phenomenal player here. You know, I think he's one of only three father and son tandems in the history of this storied program to be captains. And, you know, he is a ball of energy. He's a guy that, if you want to look up the definition of passion for your university, passion for your team, and maybe more importantly, passion for your teammates and the people that surround him, you don't need to look any further than Breckin Hager. And so he means the world to us. We're going to be excited to send him off, hopefully the right way, in his last game here at DKR. But he knows he's also still got a lot of football left ahead of him.
Brian, I wanted to ask this because it came out today, but the Blitnikoff semifinalist list was put out today, and neither LJ or Colin made the cut. And this is, I guess, top of mind after Saturday night. But do you think that them splitting the statistics, and then when you add in Devin, does that sort of warp? I mean, I know you're not in this for awards, but
right.
Just Colin and LJ together, and what they mean, if you could put them together as one.
Oh yeah, they'd be. I would assume they'd be finalists, but they're not one, and I think that's helped our offense. Mm-hmm. To be quite honest with you, is the fact that we have two weapons of that caliber out there most of the time together, and they, to be honest, they neither one of those guys care either. They want to win, and those are always team awards. You know, I know when Ricky won the Heisman, you know, he was very quick to praise his offensive line, as well he should have. I've never seen a running back take a handoff without five guys in front of him blocking, make very many yards. So, you know, these guys understand that they complement each other very, very well, and they're just excited to be having some individual success, but more importantly, to have that individual success lead to the success of their team.
Two last questions, Ed, and then Anthony in the back.
Coach, when you looked at the Iowa State and West Virginia film, what did Iowa State do that day to win that game, and where have the trick plays gone that we're still?
We had a couple. I appreciate it. We carry them every week. It's kind of a feel thing. And to be honest with you, Ed, I had a couple called that we had to check out of based on the look. So you can thank David Gibbs for that at Texas Tech for being in a sound defense. But Now, those will continue to be a staple of our offense. And then I think probably the biggest thing that Iowa State defensively did to West Virginia, when you look at the percentage of how many times they pressure on normal down and distance, so what we and in the normal field zone, so from the 10-yard line to the 15-yard line and on first and second down, so taking away backed up, taking away tight red zone, and taking away third downs, they've been around 12 to 15% pressure outfit. And against West Virginia, they pressure them 40% of the time, and which was really out of the ordinary for them. And they were fairly exotic pressures. And so, and I just thought it was, their defensive coordinator was in an unbelievable rhythm of mixing and matching and bluffing blitzes and dropping eight and, showing drop eight and blitzing from depth. And so, that was the biggest takeaway I got from watching that game, was just how much more they pressured.
Last one in the back, Anthony.
I got two questions for you, Coach. First one, is there a senior that's going to need a tissue more than the other seniors?
A senior that's going to need a tissue more than... Well, Brecken certainly comes to mind. I'm trying to go position by position. Elijah Rodriguez is a pretty emotional guy, and I don't know that it'll be, I think with him, if there's any tears shed, it'll be tears of gratitude for this university and this program, and to Coach Wareheim and Coach Hand and our coaching staff, Coach McKnight. He's such a humble guy, very faith-driven individual that I think has no problem showing his emotion and his gratitude towards us and our program.
And it's the 500th game at DKR on Saturday, Coach. How sweet and awesome is it going to be to be a part of that milestone history?
Well, it's the first I've heard of it, so I haven't had a chance to let that sink in. But I do know this is, I mean, you're talking about one of the icons in college football in terms of stadium, in terms of historic venues to see a college football game, and, the icon that is the University of Texas football and the rich tradition-laden history that's associated with this program. And of all the things that we have that are associated with us, the tower and Big Bertha and Bevo and the cannon and all of those things, I think you need to include our stadium as well into that. And, it's a stadium that, for a long time was just Texas Memorial Stadium. And I think the decision was made, and very appropriately, to add Coach Royal's name to that. And he's an icon himself, a legend in our program, and certainly a man that will never be forgotten here. And so I'm honored to be a part of any milestone at this great stadium.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Huh?